shit.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
But fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof it the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have. And, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not light. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. You can text us 53106. We're streaming the conversation as well, so you can listen on News Talk and also watch us on the Off the Ball digital and social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store to download it now if you haven't already. This week's Saturday panel is brought to you with thanks to the all new Renault Arkana, the sporty, spacious hybrid SUV. So this Renault sponsor panel dedicated to sports stars who've excelled at more than one sport. Think about all the legends of this country. Kevin Moran, Kieran Donaghy, Katie Taylor, Breach Corkery, Rena Buckley, Teddy McCarthy, Terry McHugh, Niall Quinn, Shane Curran, Shane Long, who've all excelled at more than one sport. So we're delighted to talk about that in the next hour, the benefits of it, what maybe young people should be doing, and just the insights of playing different sports and excelling at them, with Mick Galway, the former Kerry footballer, All-Ireland winner, and Irish Rugby International, the ex-All-Ireland winner with the Dubs in football, and UCD soccer and Shamrock Rovers player and basketball player Jason Churlock, and the Longford Gaelic footballer and former Essendon Aussie Rules player Mickey Quinn. Mick, Jason and Mickey, how are we all getting on?
Well, John, good.
Good to see you.
Hey, thanks.
Good to see you and hear you. Mick, I believe you met Roy Keane last night.
I did. I know. Well, Roy Keane met me, if you want to put it that way, you know. But yeah, we were down in Tralee, and it was a great evening. Obviously, social distancing and all the COVID regulations we were taking. But it was meant to happen 2 years ago. It was in aid of Kerry Hospice, and Roy had committed to do me just a chat, and that's what it was. Matt Cooper interviewed him, and it was a great evening. It was a fantastic evening. It was great to catch up with lads in Kerry that I haven't seen in a while. But I got back on the train this morning and I'm back in Kilkenny now, so that's to be done. But it was great, and you know, I've always admired Roy Keane, but you know, just to meet him in the flesh and to chat to him and listen to him, you know, up close and personal was fantastic.
And for a great cause as well, and a bit of slagging, I'm sure, with him picture with a Kerry jersey there, Mick.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure, look, and we made sure that we gave him a Kerry jersey, and he promised that he wouldn't be done with it in the Lakes of Clare or like that. So he's bringing it back to Cork.
Did you meet him earlier in your career, Mick, at all? Did you ever cross paths with
him? I remember I met him. I met him one time. I think Munster were heading somewhere, and we met him at Dublin Airport or something like that. But it was, you know, it was just a low, how's it going? But I really had a good chat with him yesterday, you know, even before the function started. I had a nice chat with him. And you know, what you see is what you get, you know. Even when he wasn't on stage, he's the same character that you see in the punditry or whatever. But good character, I must say, and I really enjoyed his company.
You were on the golf course this morning, Jason.
Well, John, I'd love to say I'm sunburnt, but I was just trying to get the heat back into me. I teed off, I'm a member in Castleknock Golf Club, and I teed off at 8:30. And after four holes, I wished I stayed in bed.
Brave man.
Yeah, well, it was nice to get out, but glad to get back into the warmth. It was chilly out there.
Good man. And Mickey, are you training? Are you playing any football at the moment?
We've a league game, a league semi-final tomorrow. And we're kind of still waiting for a manager for the county setup. So that's still in transit at the moment. So we're hoping that gets sorted sooner rather than later.
We're talking about playing different sports, lads, and Mick Galway, growing up, was your dream to be a Kerry footballer? Now, you got to an All-Ireland final in 86 and you were part of the squad. Was that your dream? Did rugby ever come into your head when you were a young lad?
No, like growing up in Curra, and, you know, I remember Mickey Ned O'Sullivan brought the Sam Maguire to our school in 75, and he was actually, at the time, he's married to our next-door neighbour of mine, Marion King, he brought to the school to Curra probably the week after Kerry won the All-Ireland in 75. And from that moment on, my dream was to play for Kerry. It didn't kick off great. I remember as a minor, as a minor, Tipperary beat us in the Munster final. I remember the following year I went straight to 21s and Clare beat us in the first round of the championship. So my football career didn't get a great start. But thankfully, the following year, Mick O'Dwyer brought me into the panel. I remember there was a, you might remember there was some kind of an issue back in the day with Adidas or something, or, you know, some, and there was kind of a strike in Kerry, and they basically had to get a team together to go up to Tour McKeady in Mayo to open a pitch. That was the good old days when there was pitch openings. And I was brought along. I remember I was marking Liam McHale. I did okay. And I was brought into the panel. And, you know, as the man says, the rest was history. But I had just started playing rugby then. So, I didn't catch a rugby ball until I was 17. But there was always a great tradition of rugby in Corrib, because Moskeen was only up the road for me. And Mick and Tom Doyle were also reared in Corrib. So, you know, there was always a great tradition of rugby in Corrib.
Were your Gaelic football skills helpful when you began catching that rugby ball on the line-out?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I remember, like, when I started playing rugby first, and I, of course, it put me straight into second row because I was tall. But, I definitely, you know, and I suppose what I was doing is what you have to do in Gaelic football. I used to attack the ball and you know, I played when I started playing rugby first, I didn't know the rules, so I played like I did as a midfielder. I kept chasing the ball, and I suppose that's what the modern game is about now. But I remember, like, I could end up in the centre, I'd be kicking balls and everything, and like, and people say you can't do that, but I said, why not? You know what I mean? And I really enjoyed it. And I suppose, yeah, when I took up the rugby at first, I just felt it was a great game. I really enjoyed it. I was kind of put on to Munster under 18 teams, and then I was only playing a year and a half, and then I joined Shannon, and I got straight into their senior team, you know what I mean? So I was trying to hit the deep end, but it certainly enjoyed every minute of it.
Jason, what was your dream when you were a young lad? Was it to be an NBA player or a soccer player or a Dublin Gaelic football player?
All of the above.
John, I suppose that's the way I was, and I think that's a starting point for not only us, but any young boy or girl out there aspiring to be the best they can be. It's having dreams and having heroes. And I suppose the key impacts on my life were the TV, depending what was on from a sporting context, they were my heroes. And it went from, it could have been basketball, it could have been tennis, it could have been rugby. The only rugby I would have exposure to was the Five Nations back in those days. And you'd be out with a rugby ball after it. And then in terms of going to stuff physically, my uncles were big Dublin supporters, Dublin GA supporters. So we went to watch the Dubs all around the country, and obviously in Croke Park. But I'd also gone to Dalymount Park to watch the Bows playing. And I would have gone to Lansdowne Road when the Joe Soap could get tickets for soccer matches as well. So that's where I started. And I had a lot of dreams and hopes when I started out, because of looking at sports and events. And so that was a big impact on me. I suppose the second big impact was the kind of role models I had. I grew up in Finglas, and I suppose at the time there were a couple of soccer players that had a chance. Pat Fenlon, who would be known now, he was a great player and a great coach. He I remember him going over to trials with Chelsea, and all the kids in the area looked up to him. I hung around with a guy called Alan Moore, who played for Ireland and Middlesbrough. And then when I went to school in St. Vincent's Glasnevin, Ken Cunningham was on his way to, I think it was Millwall at the time.
Ken,
yeah. Was it Wimbledon or Millwall he went to first?
He went to Millwall first and then Wimbledon, I think, Kenny. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, and then Desi Farrell as well would have been in the school, and he was a bit of a superstar because he played so many sports. So they would have been the big influences of me on me when I was that age. And like all kids, if you have dreams, you just want to do what you can to achieve your dreams and your goals.
So you're playing basketball, you're playing a bit of soccer as well, Jason, in your teenage years, and then you break onto the Dub scene and you win an All-Ireland at 19. Did all these sports help you in each additional sport, as it were, with your skills, with your concept of space, with coordination? Do they all complement each other?
Absolutely.
I think like in Ireland we're lucky that we kind of have a cross section of so many sports, and I suppose when I look back I regret that I didn't get a chance to play rugby. I would have loved to play it as a scrum half. I just think that potentially physically I might have had the tools to play scrum half, and even cricket it was something that I didn't get a chance to play in a game. You kind of think maybe you could have done well at that game, but certainly being exposed to different sports, I was able to kind of survive, and that's a big part of the challenge in all sports. When you look at how you prepare for sport, you can break it into the technical piece, the tactical piece, the physical piece, and also the psychological, the mindset piece. And when I look back, I certainly wasn't the biggest, the strongest, or the fastest, but I had a mindset that I wanted to be the best I could be, and I picked up the technical skills I needed to kind of survive and excel in sports. And I think that stood to me. And even when I did get to play with Dublin as a 19-year-old, I was very limited in my skill set. But I suppose it was the mindset that I had to kind of survive and understand how I could add value to the team that kind of got me through in those early years. And then I suppose when I wanted to master the sport, when I wanted to commit to one sport, then I focused on the technical and tactical sides to be the best I could be as an individual player.
And Mickey, now, when you were a young lad in your teenage years, you were underage with Bowes, I believe, soccer. You're obviously with Gaelic football, and then you got that pathway to Essendon and the Australian Football League. So what was the benefit for you of playing multiple sports and getting your insight into how sports are played differently?
Yeah, kind of touching on from what Mick and what Jason's after mentioned there, that you pick up different things from different sports, and that's something probably that you see probably as a coach now and as a player, that the tactical side of things and even the technical side of things really does help. I think with soccer, that footwork can cross over into Gaelic football for the tackling, or even rugby for that matter. And then the tactical side of things, or spatial awareness, and even angles of passing and that from soccer, triangles, creating those triangles in soccer is something that's been huge. But I probably was always heading down the route of always wanting to play professional sport. The idea of getting up and going training in the morning was something that was just ingrained in me, that I loved that idea. And then when you're home, you come home in the evening, that was your job. And whether that was soccer, tennis, Gaelic football, or whatever way things were going, and ended up heading for Australia, and that was something I wanted to do. I played under 15 and under 17 for Bowes. And then in my under 17 year, I decided I was heading to college and was going to be in Dublin. I was going to give the soccer a real shot. And it was my last year minor, and I opted out, and just gradually bit by bit, I'll just come to the games, just come to the training and try juggle the boat without telling everyone. And then from that final year in my minor year, we played Meath in the Leinster semi-final, and Scout was obviously at the game, and I got a 2-week trial down to Australia. And from there, I spent 3 years down there. So it kind of, you're heading down one pathway and it changed very quickly. But the skills that you pick up, not just the physical, but probably the tactical, technical, as Jason has mentioned, from different sports, they just make you a more rounded player or athlete. And then probably the level of coaching that you're getting from different sports too, that you're kind of working with probably some of the best coaches in different areas, that, you know, that transferable skill from one sport to the next is something that a lot of sports have, whether it be soccer, rugby, basketball. There's so many areas that kids can cross over from one to the next. And I think it's now is more important than ever, especially after the lockdown and probably 18 months without playing organized sport, that probably kids' basic fundamental movement skills aren't probably where they were. Ireland, their rates and norms have dropped off massively. And I think in the next 5 or 6 years, it's going to tell its tail too. So playing sports and multiple sports is going to be hugely important going forward.
So that actual topic there you just touched upon there, Mickey Quinn, Mick Galway, there could be this argument that Ireland are never going to win a Rugby World Cup, because if you think of New Zealand, rugby is everything there, isn't it, really, mainly? If you look at England, for soccer is the main sport. I know they play cricket as well, but mainly it's soccer. I know they play rugby union, but soccer is the religion in England. Are we too small a country, to be devil's advocate about it, to be playing all these multiple sports? And, you know, if we didn't have the GA, for example, would we have an amazing soccer team that can compete at an international level? Would we have an amazing rugby team? Or is it more important for society for kids to have fun playing multiple sports, to develop their, as Mickey said, their skills and their coordination and their different insight, and also to have fun as teammates in different sports? Should we be encouraging as a nation, Mick Galway, kids to play as many sports as possible?
Absolutely. I definitely think so. You know, it's I was growing up and you know, and we didn't have great facilities, but I played soccer, I played basketball, I played a bit of handball. You know, all these sports helped me. And I must say, I played a lot of basketball, and basketball is a great game. And, you know, and it certainly, some of the skills that I would have picked up in basketball, I brought it into rugby, because communication is huge. Peripheral vision is important. You know what I mean? And literally defense and what have you. You know what I mean? So all those sports are fantastic. But yes, you know, I would encourage kids to play all sports, try all sports, and then maybe eventually you will find your way. Like I only came across rugby by chance. I remember I was playing basketball in Killarney, and I was actually training with St. Vincent senior team, and I was only 17. And I remember I used to have to cycle to Farn Four, and the winter came in, and the boys said, look, we'll go down to Castle Island, you know, off the rugby. So I said, I'll go along, and I actually played a match the following day. You know what I mean? There was a monster trial, and I played in it, and the rest was history. But certainly, I would encourage kids to play all sports, and you know, we can still compete. Like, it's great that we beat the All Blacks a few weeks ago. I know, I suppose, the real test of any international rugby team is how they get on in the World Cup, and you know, remember going into the last World Cup, we were ranked number one. The only ranking that counts is the ranking when you come finish at the World Cup. But certainly, no. Look, and I look at all the great players, particularly in GAA, maybe down through the years that I've seen, that I've played with, and in both football and hurling. If we didn't have football and hurling, I would imagine that we'd be up there and better than the All Blacks, and probably in the same in soccer, because the amount of people that are playing GAA is fantastic, and you know, it's a phenomenal game. I live in Kilkenny here now, and I just love going along to and watching the hurling. All my kids play it, and it's just fantastic. But look, I think there's room for all sports. And bottom line, if I was to give any advice to any kid, just try them all, and you know, don't commit to something 100% maybe when you're 10 or 11 or 12. You know what I mean? Just keep trying everything, and you will find your sweet spot in the end.
Yeah, I think the Gaelic Games being a fabric of our nation is important, and also it being fun for young people to play all different types of sports is also a key thing. Then again, you have, like Jason, soccer academies now, and you know, all these underage leagues, and I can understand what the FA are trying to do. They're trying to develop the skills of players for the future. Where do you stand on the specialisation versus the multiple sports argument, given you played multiple sports?
Yeah, I suppose my presumptions are based on my experience, and I coached development squads, groups of Dublin underage footballers from under 13 up to minor, and we were very much about engaging their hearts and minds. We wanted to encourage them to really enjoy and love playing GAA and love playing for Dublin, but at the same time we didn't ask them to sacrifice or commit to our team apart from other teams. It was part, we were there to provide a platform, and if they enjoyed themselves, they come back. But if they went somewhere else and played another sport and had a better time, that was perfectly fine too. And I think I would question about that kind of early specialization. I wouldn't be quite sure whether that has the long-term benefits, and I would be always conscious about what we're trying to achieve, particularly at underage and coaching. Sometimes I think success seems to be the priority and the focus, where I would always question, should that be the priority? Because ultimately you want these young boys and girls to grow to love their sport and to be dedicated, but also when they finish playing, that they still have a grow to whatever club or affinity they have to give back in some way as a mentor or part of a committee and stuff like that. And I'm kind of always skeptical and worried about the burnout or the players that kind of, when they get to the late teens and early 20s, they're just sick of it and they finish up playing sport. And unfortunately, and we're good testaments of it, like sport can provide so much on the pitch but also off the pitch in terms of the community and the people that you meet. So I suppose in that regard, I would prefer if people had the opportunity to enjoy their sport at a young age. And if they love it and if they have a talent to become better, they'll find their way. The one thing that struck me when I was involved with the Dublin senior football team, it wasn't necessarily the best technical players or the best tactical players that ended up playing for Dublin. It was probably the guys with the best attitude. And again, there's no rush to force these young boys and girls to be the best footballers at an early age. They'll find their way. If they have the right attitude, they will find their way. So in that regard, I would be very similar to Mick there. And I know Mickey is the same, that to encourage the skills of your game and try to encourage a love of the sport and let the young boys or girls then to figure it out for themselves.
Listeners out there, 53106, if you want to get in touch with the question for Jason Sherlock and Mick Galway or Mickey Quinn on the Saturday panel about playing different sports and what your experiences are or those of your children. Mickey Quinn, I know you were talking on Twitter about maybe having a calendar for multi-sports. If you want to maybe elaborate on that, please.
Yeah, like you kind of sit down and you're looking at different competitions. I see it in the school at the moment and St. Mel's College there, that, you know, fixtures are just coming thick and fast, and then you're trying to cater for all that kids can play different sports rather than saying you have to pick one and go with it. But you'd love to see it across the board that sporting organisations can actually work together rather than trying to compete against each other and saying, oh, we're going to lose him to soccer and we have to, you know, keep him playing Gaelic football or vice versa. Whereas I think there's still room to try and allow for that if the calendar was broken up into four slots, November, December, January is one, that's your winter slot, that maybe for basketball, next one February, March, April for athletics, and then you're into your summer months and whatever gets that then May, June, July for Gaelic football maybe, and then the last term from September, October, August, September, October, that you're heading into maybe soccer for that last period. And whether that's up until a certain age, up until 16, 17, I think kids shouldn't, at least that age, shouldn't have to choose. And you see the dropout rate from then on, from 17s, 18s, 19s, that there's a huge dropout rate, and probably even lower now, that by giving kids that opportunity to play different sports, they're going to be with their friends. You hope that they're going to find a sport that they enjoy, rather than, right, Gaelic football doesn't suit, I'm not playing it, and then that's it, they're finished playing sport. That haven't experienced any other sports that they enjoy, they associate that sport, or maybe a bad memory that they had with that chosen sport, that they associate every sport with the same standard of coaching or same experiences. So that's something that probably as a PE teacher and probably from my own experience that I've realised that, you know, the more sports that you take part in, the better it is for probably lifelong learning and staying fit and healthy right up until your older ages, that people can experience those kind of sports, that when they give up team sports, that they have a grow for something else, whether it be cycling, running, swimming, and those individual sports too, that team sports aren't for everyone. And I think that's probably we jump forward into team sports massively probably in this country. And probably a lot of that is down to probably basic fundamental movement skills. I find that if you don't have them, if you're trying to take part in a team sport, you're not going to enjoy if a ball is thrown to you and you can't catch it and no one passes you the ball. So, it's an area that I'm fairly passionate about, and you're probably all hands on deck when you see it coming through schools, that it's something that really needs work.
Okay, thanks so much, Mickey Quinn, for the moment. Mick Galway and Jason Sherlock on the Saturday panel on sporting careers in more than one sport. We're going to have more after two, after the news. You can text us on 53106. Just to let you know, folks, Arsenal lead Newcastle by 0-0 in the Premier League, Bukayo Saka with the goal. We're back after the news. Stay with us.
And while we're getting carried away, Joe, Jason Knight reminds me a little bit of young Roy Keane. But while we're in full buzz at the moment, I think I'll just throw that in there and heap unnecessary pressure on the show.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Arsenal 2, Newcastle 0 now in the Premier League. You can text us 53106 and tweet us at Off the Ball. This week's Saturday panel brought to you with thanks to the new all-Renault Arkana, the sporty, spacious hybrid SUV. We're chatting to Jason Sherlock, Mick Galway and Mickey Quinn about what it's like to excel at more than one sport. You can listen on News Talk, watch us as well on the digital and social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. Great reaction to the panel, as you'd expect such great stars to have with us today. 53106, here's the flavour of some of the texts. Have to agree with Jason's point on teens getting sick of their sport. I played at a decent level of GA, Dublin Underage and Schoolboy A soccer from about 11. Then I reached 16 or 17. I had enough. I was done. 5 nights training, matches Saturday and Sunday. I'm 42 now. Still a massive regret. I didn't keep going. Never lost a touch though, says Johnny in Blanchardstown. Team sports in particular pose a dilemma when there's a competitive element, but not all children will be capable of this. Swimming, cycling, karate and other apparently individual sports have much to offer those who just want to train but don't feel the burning desire to win, says Brendan at Waterford. Jason's point about the personality and attitude being important is 100%. It takes a strong personality to rebel against the only one sport attitude of clubs and coaches who are all about winning, says one of our texters. Another one, I've got 5 kids playing 3 to 4 sports each of the past 10 years. All the research shows this is the best way to develop athletically, but it's extremely hard. Lip service, pay to it, but ultimately coaches aren't happy and feel not committed. Still doing it at 16, 17. Joined them thinking is needed to support families. And I coach multi-sports. My kids play multi-sports. When the relationship between coaches is good, it works. When there's no real relationship, it doesn't. Kids can either be very lucky or unlucky, as it usually is an individual thing rather than a link between clubs. Very difficult when some coaches cannot see the bigger picture. All three of you folks, you had really good success in your teenage years, early in life, Mick Galway. Did being in that Kerry dressing room with all those winners really give you a mindset advantage when you took that to your professional career in rugby? I was in a winning dressing room at an early age.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I felt I was very lucky at the time to be with some great players. They were my heroes. You know, you can rattle off the names, Paddy Shea, Pat Spillane, Ogie Moore, Mikey Sheehy, you know, the Bomber, Joe Power, Shawnee Walsh, Jacko. You just go on and on, Charlie Nelligan. Like, it's Shawnee Walsh. Like, they were just phenomenal players. And I would have learned an awful lot from them, each and every one of them, because they had a great winning mentality. And of course, that winning mentality came from Mick O'Dwyer. You know, I thought Mico was ahead of his time as a coach, because I remember the training. You know, you could get the players to peak at the right time. And of course, back then September was when you had to peak. I remember being involved with the squad, and the training wasn't too tough. Before the Munster final against Cork, and but it really stepped up then. It really stepped up. You know, there was laps, but that was just building endurance. And then there was, as we used to call them, wire to wires. That was just like doing intervals. You know what I mean? And then just getting just the sharp stuff coming up to, I suppose, to, you know, I remember like we obviously played a meet in the semi final and Tyrone a couple of weeks later. But certainly what I loved about the whole thing was I learned so much, and what those lads, they just brought it to a new level when they had to, and then the winning mentality, the never say die attitude was certainly something that I brought on to I suppose to Munster. You know, and I was very lucky as well, as of course I was involved with Shannon, which we had a great team as well. You know, like I was playing with players like James McLaughlin and Colm Tucker. You know, these were legendary players, and there I was playing with them. But certainly, I learned an awful lot when I was younger, and certainly, you know, as Jason said earlier, you know, it's you just have to bring a different skill set to and different, I suppose, temperament to different sports. But certainly, you have to be mentally strong. You have to be, you know, you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe you're a winner. You know, in I suppose in professional rugby, again, I was a second one. I was only 6'4". You know what I mean? A lot of the lads I was playing against could be maybe 6'9" and 6'8". So, you know, I had to adapt in that. And I was lucky enough, I suppose, I had John Hayes lifting me as well, and that certainly helped. But, you know, you learn so much. And particularly, you know, I had played 10 years with Munster, for example, and then the game went professional. You know, so I got another 7 years out of that. As it happened, I got 7 one-year contracts. You know, if they'd given me a three-year contract, maybe first day out, I might have only lasted 3 years, but I was paying for my job, and it was, from that point of view, it was fantastic. But the first day that I started playing sports to the last day, whatever, competitive, you always learn something new about yourself, and you always learn something. So that's the great thing, I think, about all sports. You will never know enough. Like, I remember I was probably playing the best rugby of my life. And you know yourself, when I was probably in my mid-20s and I wasn't getting on the Irish team at the time. And you know, I captained Ireland when I was 35, you know. So it's something that, and I wasn't as good a player then, but I suppose I knew more about the game, and I certainly knew more about myself. And, you know, it's like the old cliche, you know, you just learn so much, and sometimes you can be exerting energy and it could be going in the wrong directions. You just get cuter as you get older, and that's certainly something that I picked up.
Mickey Quinn, what was that first day like playing in the Aussie Rules League with Essendon?
Yeah, it was probably just head down, pure naivety, really. Getting the plane and head halfway around the world to another country to play a sport that you've never really seen played properly. And kind of, I remember being interviewed afterwards in the dressing room, and kind of camera stuck in your face, and was like, what's going on here? And then the next day, it was a choir boy heading on that. He kind of just out of my depth, but that's the thing with youth, that you just get on with it, and that naivety was probably what got me there and kept me there for the first couple of years. And probably I found as the time went on, I probably got very caught up in structures and formations and tactics and percentages, and being probably too worried about making mistakes. And that was something probably that I've learned from the different sports. And you see it with kids now, that not having that fear of making a mistake. And you know, the best games I played in AFL were when I played off the cuff. Everything that I learned playing Gaelic football, I was playing as if I was still playing Gaelic football, and give and go, stay in the move, and throwing jinx and shimmies and things like that. And they're not expecting those kind of things out there. Whereas if you kind of probably fall into the trap of playing to structures and tactics and formations, you kind of lose that little bit of an edge that you may have had. And, you know, I always look back in that first game as, you know, it was just as if nothing really happened, or I just got on with it. And it was more so probably the aftermath, the day after, where you kind of, you're getting interviewed, and you know, that was probably the quickest debut by an Irish guy. And it was kind of, Marty Clark was there at the time, Kevin Dias. Marty had the record for the quickest debut, but I think it was the caliber of coaching that was there at the moment, or at the time when I was there, that there was an Alan Richardson who had worked with Marty Clark, and Matthew Knight's his manager, and probably put his trust in me to give me a go. And that's something that I'll be forever grateful for. But it kind of leads into the coaching side of things now, that you have to give kids an opportunity to learn and make mistakes, and that's what they learn from, I think. And sport will probably give that resilience to make mistakes and learn from them, whereas there's probably not as much of that if you're not involved in sport.
And when you came back to Longford then, Mickey, was it a case of, listen lads, now these are the kind of things I can give you an insight about that we were maybe not doing the right way, that I can give you this window, that this is what professional sport can do and can bring, and these are some practices we could bring into the Longford fold. Is that how it worked, or did it transpire that way?
You kind of try. Like, I remember sitting on the plane on the way back with my wife, girlfriend at the time, and jotting down and all the different things that you'd love to do or change, and this could change and this could that change. But you're probably beaten down as you go get back into the system, and that's kind of, that train of thought slightly changed. But I remember first 3 or 4 months back, we played Longford Town in a charity match, Longford GA versus Longford Town. And I remember Vinnie Perth introducing himself and shaking my hand.
Was it soccer or Gaelic football, Mickey?
Soccer. Well, yeah, could you call what we were playing soccer? It probably was. It was probably booted as long as you can and have a big striker and compete and throw yourself in there. But it was soccer in Flanker Park at the time, and Vinny came up to me after the game and, you know, and you're definitely heading for Gaelic. I heard, you know, I've seen you play. Would you be interested in playing soccer? And kind of always look back at that. I was like, Jesus, I wonder, could I have given that another go? And I think anyone that plays multiple sports, and probably Jason and Mick could tell you that when you're probably there, you'd wonder, would you be able to give it a rattle for 6 months or whatever, or even see what Kieran Donaghy and these guys are doing and jumping from basketball to Gaelic football, that would you still be able to do it when you get older in comparison to when you're doing it at a younger age?
Jason, you're 19 years of age, you've been playing basketball, you've been playing soccer, and then you're lighting up the summer for Dublin. Did you pinch yourself at the time?
I probably did. I was just in that bubble. And again, I was very lucky in the sense of the Dublin team at that stage had been knocking on the door, and they hadn't quite knocked the door down, and they were probably open to something different. And I just fit the mold. And it was just one of those years. I suppose when I look back at it, I was very lucky. I was playing soccer with UCD, but Dr. Tony O'Neill, who's passed since, he was happy for me to play both soccer for UCD and GA. So there were times where I'd play a match for UCD on one night, and then I'd be playing a league match for Dublin the next day. Actually, my debut was against Kerry down in Killarney, in the league that year. And again, that obviously gave me the opportunity to kind of put my hand up to play. I think from playing in Croke Park as a 19-year-old, it could sound daunting for a lot of people. I was so innocent that was one part, that the innocence of youth, it didn't really faze me. But also from my basketball, I played in very hostile environments around Ireland, played up in St. Malachy's basketball, in Malachy School, played in Castlebar against England, played in down in the Neptune, and again in the Procreal Hall against North Mon. So really hostile areas and hostile situations where you needed to have a good temperament to survive. So that stood to me then when I was playing for the Dubs. And I think that year I was just living on instinct. You know, in terms of my contribution, it was very little, but I suppose they were significant as well. And I was just fortunate that I had a team that were willing to kind of put up with the level of input I was making into the team. And I think I loved the crowd. I reveled in that. I really enjoyed that, having the buzz of the occasion. We'd represented Ireland and Turkey, and we'd played in stadiums with 5,000 people, packed stadiums. And as a kind of 16, 17-year-old, that was intimidating, but it certainly prepared me for bigger occasions and atmospheres as I got older. So certainly, yeah, I did have the pinch myself, and it didn't faze me. And it was just one of those seasons where everything went well.
And then a couple of decades later, Jason, you're part of a 5-in-a-row Dublin winning coaching setup with Jim Gavin. I'm just fascinated to know how much basketball experience went into your coaching when you were involved with the Dubs. Now you've left now, you might be able to talk about it a bit more.
Yeah, well, I think as former players and athletes, we will, as coaches then, we will look back at our own perspective and our own experiences. And Mick obviously mentioned it already about the impact basketball had on his sport. And certainly it was the same for me. I think whatever about the skills of the game, I think tactically, because the game is obviously 5-on-5, you do understand what every player is doing on the court. And I remember in the GAA context, we had a session with the former great John Morrison. He was a great coach. And I remember we were playing a match and we scored a goal, and he stopped it and he said, "Well, why did you score that?" And people were kind of scratching their heads going, "Well, such and such just put it in the back of the net." And he says, "No, but why did he score? Well, someone passed him the ball, and how did that person get the ball?" And it was the first time it dawned on me about actually thinking about why something happened. And that was something in a GA context. That was something I was very familiar with from a basketball context. So to your point then, John, in terms of my own coaching, I certainly felt that if you could have a GA team where number one knew what number 15 was doing or thinking, Now it can be hard because the pitch obviously is so big, but certainly that was in the back of my mind in terms of how we approached the game from a coaching perspective. And again, we were just very lucky. We were dealing with some highly intelligent guys that were humble enough to listen to some fella that used to play as well. So yeah, it was a great environment, a great learning environment where they were open and willing to get better. And I suppose as coaches, all we had to do was try to kind of point their nose to areas or situations where they could improve. And certainly I think basketball has done that. I think offensively, in terms of structure, you look at like the way defenses had been setting up, and I think we take great pride in the way we looked at breaking down kind of set defenses. But the other two big areas now are the kickouts for and kickouts against. To me, that's the most exciting part of GA now. You see teams now, whether they're going to sit back or whether they're going to press up. And again, that's something that's very familiar in basketball. And you can see now that the teams, and it creates great energy. I'm sure as a player, and Mickey, you're still there. Like it creates great energy when you know you're going on the attack and you're going to try and win the turnover. And then when you get the turnover, you're on the attack straight away. So yeah, but like all sports, I think there's all these little nuggets that you can take from any sport. And certainly I think basketball has a lot of synergy towards our Gaelic games.
Was there specific plays in All-Ireland finals in close moments or goals or points that you kind of smiled to yourself when it all came off, Jason? Like that kind of, yes, link between basketball and any examples you give us?
I wouldn't give specific, sure, examples, but I think I think that's the skill of any team, that you're all on the same page. And again, rugby is such a structured game, and I'm sure if you go back to the All Blacks match, I'm sure there was a lot of satisfied coaches and players knowing that they were set plays that worked. And I suppose there were elements of it like that where if there was a situation, we were prepared for it. So there were certainly a couple ones that I'd like to think over the years. And I'm sure Mick, as a Kerry man, he might remember the throw in 2019. So that was interesting how it played out. And again, it was very satisfying to see guys kind of think about a situation and, okay, it wasn't the way it was meant to be executed.
Is this Owen Merchant, Jason?
It might have been, yeah, it might have been. I didn't want to mention it to Mick, but
very good.
But yeah, like obviously Owen, the way he went, but if you looked at what the six forwards did, you might get a sense of the game intelligence and the selflessness they had as a team.
Yeah, very good. Mick Galway, when I'm looking at the All Blacks game there recently, and Brian O'Driscoll's called it the complete performance, where he played over 140 times in tests, you must be excited. And it's almost like with Paul O'Connell and Mike Cash, they're now revealing what they've been working on for the last couple of years. And that's quite thrilling, really, to feel that way now about an Irish rugby team going into Six Nations.
Absolutely. You know, I went to all three matches, Japan match first, and then I was thinking, were Japan up to it? You know what I mean? I just felt it wasn't a great test before we played the All Blacks, but certainly I knew after the All Blacks game and even again last weekend against Argentina, that the Irish rugby has gone to a new level. You know what I mean? And sometimes you need to be careful when you're saying that, because, you know, history will tell us that we've always peaked too early, probably 2 years before the Rugby World Cup. But I think there's something different in this team. And yes, you can see like Paul O'Connell has written all over that. You know what I mean? And particularly the forwards, like I see how he's obviously done the lineouts and stuff, but each and every one of those players, they all know what they're doing. You know, the game of rugby has evolved so much. When I started playing rugby, you know, there were certain players on the team that maybe never touched the ball in the whole game and they could end up being man of the match. You know what I mean? But like now, it's just a complete game, you know, and I think it's a fantastic game. And the way Ireland are playing at the moment, you know, when the ball is live, there's no number on your back. You see backs, you see the forwards out the backs, you see the forwards pop you up in the wing, you know, you see props, like, and particularly, I suppose, this Irish team, you know, Porter, Kelleher and Tadhg Furlong, like the way that those three players are front row players, the amount of tackles they're putting in, the amount of ball carries they're making, the amount of just the energy out of those three alone is huge. I remember when I was playing rugby back in the day, you know, I think our target was as front five players, that's front row and second row, was to put in five tackles. Now the front rows are probably putting in up to 20 tackles. You know what I mean? And then that gives, I suppose, other players the opportunity to make space. But certainly, you know, and Jason mentioned about basketball there, you know, five players and they all know what they're doing. I think that's where rugby is at the moment. I think, you know, the prop needs to know what the fullback is doing. And as I said, when the ball is out around the pitch, there's no number in your back. You just carry on and play the game and play the set moves. And it's certainly a very exciting game now, and it's a very exciting team. I just hope that we can keep it going. Certainly the upcoming Six Nations is going to be tough, particularly with France and England away. And I think we'll know a lot more about when we go down to New Zealand, play them in three tests, and I think we're playing the Maoris as well.
Yeah.
We'll know an awful lot more about this Irish team maybe come next July.
53106 for your text. Mick Galway, Jason Sherlock and Mickey Quinn on playing more than one sport. It's Arsenal 2, Newcastle 0 in the closing stages of the Premier League. A text in here: we need to direct the early learning and sport fundamentals through schools as a subject. It needs investment. We should be identifying where young children fit into the talent and skills pool. Ireland could have amazing Olympic athletes if we structured our teaching of all the fundamental learning strands, says Brendan. I play Gaelic to a high level, as well as athletics, soccer, rugby and basketball. The only reason bar attitude I found out when I played under 17 against Australians was a cross training I did and the disposable skills that made me ahead of other technically better players who went on to represent their countries for years. I played Gaelic the most, never stopped running, and enjoyed rugby the best. Enjoyed every minute of them all, says Dima G in Cavan. We are a recreational sport nation, says one of our texters. Our sports culture is multi-sport. Only the FAI don't get this. The national leagues are nonsensical. They're forcing children to select one sport far too soon. We also need better calibration between codes. Thousands of children are having to pick one sport from the ages of 10, because local clubs and leagues are playing the same ages at the same days. Clubs should be offering free play sessions where children do not have to commit to a team but can also just show up and play the game freely. It would be helpful as well, Mickey Quinn, if the GAA facilities were able to be used by other sports. We see, I think there's a story there recently I read about Ballygunner and Waterford didn't feel they could open up facilities to Bohemians Waterford soccer team. I don't know if you saw that story, but sharing of facilities, I think, especially with all these talk about stadiums for the World Cup of 2030, could be a departure that is welcome and needed, I think.
Definitely. Like, I probably see it for ourselves there's times where we're heading to Dublin for training, even at a county level, and that's from the GAA side of things, with lots of facilities there. And we're probably at a stage where the GAA are ahead of other sports facility-wise, and maybe behind in coaching side of things and playing catch-up there. And that's something, the coaching side of things and having the facilities has been huge. And I think with the way things are in this country, having all-round weather pitches available for different sports, and that kind of probably links back in what we had talked about there with that understanding, and rather than competing against each other, that clubs are able to work together, soccer and Gaelic football and whatever, rugby as well, that they can feed off each other. So hopefully that in time that might be something that can happen, because I think probably from a whole looking at the GAA fixture from a senior level is something that has been talked about massively, but right down to an underage level, such a long season there for 9 months playing Gaelic football, or even jumping on 10, 11 months for some kids. It's too long, and I suppose that's what leads to the burnout and that repetition of the same movement and actions in that sport. You know, your repetition injuries with hips, groins, and things like that is what's causing the burnout and causing these probably serious injuries, by maybe early specialising in a sport and then the same kind of training and movement from a really young age causes that.
One of our humorous textures has been in touch. Yeah, you're right. They should open the Viva to Gaelic football and hurling. And hey lads, I've got a son who seems to have a flair for all sports, was in GA development squads until told he had to give priority to GA to progress at under 14 level. Now playing soccer at League of Ireland Academy level and just plays GA club level. A lot of coaches have got the wrong mentality, which leads to a loss of young athletes, says Paul on 53106. This is the balance in act, isn't it, between our, I suppose, our culture of winning versus development of skills in different sports, and the almost the conflict between the two. Just before we wrap up, Jason Sherlock, did the Dubs need a bit of a transition after all these All-Ireland, six All-Irelands in a row? Are you hoping to see maybe Paul Mannion, Jack McCaffrey back next year? It'll be an interesting 2022 for the Dubs.
Yeah, it will. I think, I suppose from a Dublin perspective, it's not where we'd like to be, but we are where we are. And even when I finished up, I always felt that There was another opportunity for growth when those guys faced a bit of a challenge, and obviously they've had that adversity with the year that they've had, so it's now over to them to kind of fix that. And I think from a Dublin perspective, we always would love to have the best players available and playing, but at the same time, we respect that, one, these guys have given a great service to Dublin. They don't owe Dublin anything, and there's a lot more going on in their lives than just football. And secondly, we just want to see that the best team that Dublin can put out and perform as well as they can. So yeah, it'll be. I think it's not ideal that they didn't have the success that they might have liked, but certainly it'll be interesting to see how they respond from last year.
Mickey, earlier on the ditch, I had my head in my hands when that vote was defeated about the football championship structure. I think next year will be difficult for Gaelic football. Are you as motivated as you have been, or did you find it deflating, that vote?
Yeah, it is. Look, you're probably going into that time of the year where it's kind of brushed to one side, and kind of probably from our situation where we're still waiting on things to happen, and management-wise, we haven't got off the ground yet. So you're kind of sitting waiting and waiting for probably fixtures to come out and see what's going to happen next. The probably worry is how the Talisman Cup and that second tier competition, how it's ran off and what kind of publicity it gets in order for development for Longford football and counties of a similar standard. And you know, we've got a lot of really strong underage players coming up, and you'd hope that when they look to that level that they can see, okay, there is something there for us that we can train and play for, rather than maybe being deterred by it and maybe heading in a different direction and playing a different sport. But that's something that hopefully can be narrowed down in the next couple of months, and hopefully can get before Congress again for another vote.
There is pressure for change, I think. There is pressure to have a meaningful situation where Longford can be battling for a trophy and have a good run of matches in the summer.
Definitely. Like, look, we know we're not going to win in All-Ireland, and there's no point in kind of, you have to be realistic about things, but I think everyone should have an opportunity to compete and play and win. I suppose my mantra probably as a coach and teacher is for things to be fun and competitive, and that goes from nursery right through to senior. And you know, that's what anyone wants is for it to be competitive, and you have an opportunity to win something, and that you can have fun doing it. So hopefully time will be on our side, and that can happen in hopefully the next 2-3 years.
And Mick Galway, to finish, did Roy Keane give any insights last night we haven't heard?
No, to be honest, you know, in fairness, what you see is what you get. He was fantastic. You know, he spoke about great coaches and great players, and you know, obviously the United thing was mentioned about, but you know, he's obviously still very close to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, so there was nothing negative. But in fairness to him, he's you know, what you see is what you get, and I was delighted for that, because you know, sometimes you could meet people and you know, they're not the same person that you might think they were, but with Roy Keane is 100%.
Absolutely. I think what we see is what we get from yourself, Mick Galway, and Jason Sherlock, and Mickey Quinn. Lads, stay in from the cold, and thanks for giving us such insight into what it's like to play different sports for the Sports Mad Nation. Thanks so much for joining the Saturday panel, lads.
Cheers, John.
Thanks very much.
See you, Mickey, Jason. All the best.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.